Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. The lasting legacy of the movie Giant is bigger than the fact that it was James Dean's last film, bigger than the amazing performances by Elizabeth Taylor, and bigger than the Best Director Award it earned George Stevens. As my guest discovered when he visited the West Texas town of Marfa, where the movie was filmed in the 1950s, the adaptation of Edna Ferber's beloved novel was arguably the first movie to candidly depict the routine discrimination suffered by Mexican Americans at the hands of their Anglo neighbors. Giant gave some Latino children their first glimpse at people who looked and talked and lived the way they did, and left impressions that for some have lasted nearly 60 years. Filmmaker Hector Galán directed the new documentary Children of Giant. It will air on PBS stations, including Channel 13 Television, tomorrow night at 9. Hector, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we talk about the film that you made, I would love to hear your personal relationship to the original Giant. When did you first see it, and what were your initial impressions?
Well, you know, when they filmed, when Giant arrived in Marfa in the summer of 1955, I was 2 years old. So I had heard about it growing up from different relatives and people who had seen it. But I actually didn't see the movie until I was in my early 20s in college, when I actually sat down and watched the 3.5 hour long movie. And what I had heard before I saw the movie, It was true. I think what George Stevens, what he showed and what he depicted, George was way ahead of his time.
So it's a 3.5 hour film, as you mentioned, but for people who haven't seen it or haven't seen it in a while, can you give us a sort of elevator speech summary of what it was about?
It's about a ranching dynasty, you know, over 25 years, three generations. Big Benedict, who's the role of Rock Hudson plays, and Leslie Benedict, his wife, which is Elizabeth Taylor, coming to the strange land of West Texas. And then their son, Jordy, that's played by Dennis Hopper, who marries Juana in the movie, played by Elsa Cardenas, a Mexican actress that was from Mexico City at the time she was 16, that sends shockwaves through this dynasty on Riata, which is the big, you know, hundreds of acres. You know, it's really sort of based around the King Ranch, where Edna Ferber spent a lot of her research, a lot of her time when she was doing the original book. And it's their life as it changes, you know, and it's a story about money and the nouveau rich, you know, the James Dean character who is the rags to riches story in the show. It's about racial intolerance, and has the Elizabeth Taylor character was one of the early feminists in a Western. It was a different type of Western, but it was more of a dark picture of what was happening in Texas at that time, particularly to Mexican Americans.
It is really astonishing to have for the first time a Western that challenged rather than reinforced traditional myths about the heroicism of the American West. Here we saw the stark beauty and sort of the strength of characters, but we also saw the kind of ugly underbelly that all of our mythology had concealed for a long time.
Well, that's why Edna Ferber, when she published A Giant, 2 years before the making of the movie, before it was adapted to a screenplay, she was hated here in Texas by a lot of people, a lot of powers that be, because of what she wrote and the caricatures and this, you know, that she would, you know, describe Texans as, and, you know, her being from New York and so forth. It just really, I mean, people, they wanted to lynch her, you know, a lot of people who read the book. But yeah, you're right. I think George Stevens did capture the big story, you know, the land and the big picture and the big Texas. He did capture it, but then he also pulled in a lot of what Edna Ferber discovered, and sometimes even created his own scene and made it even bigger.
Certainly, 1955, 56, when the movie was being made, was before the migration of so many Americans into parts of the Southwest, by which I mean to say that George Stevens could have filmed this somewhere in the deserty areas, the arid parts of Southern California, and not too many viewers would have known the difference. Why was it so important to him to come to Texas, and why did he choose Marfa specifically?
Well, you know, obviously, people... And this is what you know, just by talking to different people and some people who were involved at the time, they wouldn't allow him to film on the King Ranch because of the book. But they did, you know, scour the Southwest, even places in Mexico for a location. But this place, I think, really attracted. And I think George Stevens was convinced that this movie needed to be in Texas because of the story. But here in Marfa, you do have this contrast, you know, where... It'd be very difficult to get mountains, say, in the King Ranch. But here you can see the plains and then you can see the mountains in the background. He just fell in love with the location.
Let's talk about Edna Ferber, because I think it's so fascinating. She was a Jewish woman born in Kalamazoo, Michigan, living and working and writing in New York. How did she get so interested in ethnic tensions in the Southwest?
I don't think she was expecting that. You know, I think when she came down, because she was writing a lot about America's frontier, and, you know, she encountered that. I don't think she had any preconceived notions before she came to Texas and stayed on the King Ranch. As a matter of fact, she hung around with, after doing her research there, hung around with Hector P. Garcia, who was a founder of the GI Forum, one of the early Mexican-American civil rights organizations. He was a physician. And ex-vet from World War II, hung around with him and went on his runs and everything. You got to see firsthand the conditions that Mexican-Americans were living under and how they were segregated, you know, and looked upon sometimes by the powers that be. And so all of that, I think, is you know, I've heard stories from Wanda Garcia, the daughter of Hector P. Garcia, that some characters... Like Juana's father, who's a doctor in the movie, is actually based by or you know, Hector P. Garcia. And in the diner, there's a diner scene that they talk about because she would spend a lot of time at their home, the Garcia home. And I think that's where she first encountered this and included it in Giant.
Hey, you.
You're in the wrong place, amigo. Come on, let's get out of here. Vamos, andale. Your money's no good here. Come on, let's go. You too.
Hold on a minute.
Yes? What do you want?
Now, look here, Sarge. I'd sure appreciate it if you were a little more polite to these people.
Oh, you would you?
I'm Vic Benedict. Your neighbor, you might say.
Does that give you special privileges?
My name Benedict's meant something to people around here for a considerable time.
That there papoose down there. His name Benedict, too?
Yeah, come to think of it.
It is.
All right, forget I ask you. Now, you just go back over there and sit down, and we ain't going to have no trouble. But this bunch here is going to eat somewhere else. All right, come on, let's go.
Thank you.
Come on, you two. Sue me.
In the scene you just heard from the movie Giant, that was Bick Benedict, played by Rock Hudson, renouncing his racist beliefs, standing up to the bigoted diner owner Sarge in the film Giant. We're speaking this hour with the director of a documentary about that film. It's called Children of Giant, and Hector Galán is my guest. Hector, am I right that that scene was not a part of Ferber's original novel, but it was something that George Stevens felt was important to insert?
That's right. It wasn't... In the novel, Anna Ferber does allude to Mexicans not being served in different restaurants, but that scene is not in there. George Stevens created it for the movie, and it's one of the major scenes, I think, of Giant, because that's, you know, Big Benedict's transformation. protecting, you know, his daughter-in-law and his grandson, who's now Mexican. It's, you know, in the scene, he loses the fight, but, you know, basically wins the war. And to us, as Mexican-Americans, people like my father, who actually would tell me stories exactly like that, of not necessarily the fight scene, but being denied service, you know, not being served in hotels or restaurants or anything, he would tell me those stories. And so to me, it just hit home because I, you know, I'd go, wow. And for Mexican-Americans, that's a major, major scene.
We're speaking this hour with director Hector Galán of the new documentary Children of Giant. You can see it on PBS stations, including Channel 13 Television, KERA, tomorrow night at 9. We'll come back to our discussion with Hector in a few minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. Back in 2 minutes with Hector Galán.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies, offering evening programs for a Master of Liberal Studies and the new Doctor of Liberal Studies degree. You can design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU this fall. More at smu.edu/GLS.
There, the theme from the movie Giant. We are speaking this hour to documentary director Hector Galán, whose film Children of Giant will air on PBS stations, including KERA Channel 13 Television, tomorrow night at 9. By the way, you can hear Hector speaking again tomorrow on Texas Standard at 10 in the morning. So if you can't get enough, listen to the show and then also tune in to Texas Standard and watch the doc. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Hector, it's worth noting that Marfa, at the time this film was made, was one of those small towns that was like literally divided by the tracks. Whites on one side, Mexican-Americans on the other. Schools were segregated and students went through this really bizarre and insensitive like ceremony at school in which they were asked to bury their connection to the Spanish language.
That's true. But, you know, Marfa is, in my film, used as a microcosm because the cities throughout, and towns, and communities throughout the Southwest during that time were very similar. You had the demarcation lines, you had the barrios, you had the segregated schools. When I started first grade, I went to an integrated school, had just been integrated. But I do remember very clearly the teacher would whack me on my, she'd have me put my hands on the desk and she'd whack me with a yardstick for speaking Spanish. But that was very common. Mexican schools. My dad went to one himself, was forced to go to one in Cristobal, Texas, in West Texas. But that's the way it was. And it's interesting because the people who arrived in Marfa, the cast and the crew, to do the movie in 1955, had no idea that it was that segregated, that, you know, you couldn't be, you wouldn't be served in restaurants or hotels or anything like that. And it surprised a lot of people, including Elsa Cardenas, who was from Mexico City, who played Juana, who she was surprised that was going on.
Talk about this. So George Stevens certainly had an investment in portraying the racism that existed throughout the American Southwest against Mexican-Americans. At the same time, he put a lot of the actors playing Mexican-American characters in his film in very dark makeup to accentuate their skin, despite the fact that, as we know, real Mexicans and Mexican-Americans can be pale or dark or anywhere in between. It's fascinating to me that a film that wanted to challenge prejudice also found itself trafficking in stereotypes to tell that story.
You know, I think you're right in many ways. But I don't know if it was, you know, like, for instance, Elsa Cardenas is very light-skinned. If you meet her in person and has light eyes. But in the movie, they made her very dark. And she was telling me that she basically was crying when she saw that. And she didn't know how people, she had already done some parts in Mexico, how they were going to react to that. But as we explain in the documentary, I think what he was trying to do is really make sure that the people didn't, because, you know, Latinos, they come in different colors, and some dark, some are light. Some you wouldn't even know were Latino. But to make sure that the audience understood that this was a Mexican and a dark-skinned one, because that even made it, you know, worse for Big Benedict, you know, the Rock Hudson character who, you know, in the movie, he basically was a racist. And so I think that's why, you know. And not only Elsa, her role, but the kids and everybody else, they were very dark.
What do locals remember, and a lot of the people that you spoke to were children at the time, about what felt like all of Hollywood descending on this little town of, you know, 2,000 people or so?
Well, they were totally excited, you know, because at that time, Elizabeth Taylor and Rock Hudson were big names. I mean, they were big movie stars coming into town. And so everybody. And it's interesting because George Stevens opened the set. It was an open set. And so people would picnic and they'd take their family. You know, everybody would show up to watch the filming. And everybody participated. And like, you know, like I mentioned, the cast and crew had no idea that these people were actually separate. But at that point, they came together to witness, many as children, the making of this film, which in reality was a reflection of their own very lives, of that year, of what they were living in 1955. They didn't know that. The Mexican-American extras and many of the witnesses, they had no idea what the content of the movie was going to be until it came out. I mean, they hadn't read the book. A lot of people couldn't afford it to buy that book. And ironically, when the movie did come out in 1956, they had to see it in segregated theaters.
Hmm. Some of the people who had appeared in the film couldn't sit with their white neighbors to watch it.
No.
1-800.
That's the way it was.
And we should say a different print of the film was shipped to theaters in Mexico.
That's right. When they had, because of the controversy, they thought Warner Brothers at that time, they were going to get a lot of backlash from countries like Mexico and Latin America. And so they censored the film. You know, they took out all, you know, scenes that dealt with discrimination and segregation and any. More than 30 minutes of the film was cut out. And people were just very angry in Mexico. And so was George Stevens. They took it upon themselves, sort of like a PR move, but it backfired, you know. And then it was years later they saw the uncensored version. But yes, it went out censored.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Roland in Dallas. Hi, Roland.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Yes, I was just wondering if you had seen the documentary Return to Giant, which came out probably about 10 years ago now, and that was also about going back to Marfa and talking to a lot of the people who were in the movie and people from the town of Marfa and how it affected them.
I did. I did see that documentary, and it's really more of a celebratory type of documentary, celebrating the making of the movie Giant. I think that was the 50th year anniversary, I think. Children of Giant is very different than that. As a matter of fact, I think Return to Giant was offered as a bonus DVD with the purchase of the movie Blu-ray, the new Blu-ray.
Hmm.
The Children of Giant is very different. It takes a totally different look at what this movie meant. You know, a lot of people downplayed the Elsa role and the, you know, some of these things like the discrimination, the feminism, and just kind of only think about the big picture, you know, the big Texas myth and the open sky and all of that. Whereas our take is totally different. It's like looking at Giant totally differently of what people really didn't want to see, but now you're seeing. And I was told this actually by a Hollywood critic, Susan King, that reviews classics, that she had never seen Giant in that light of what we open up. And it's real complex, but very enlightening in a way because of the director, George Stevens. You know, he changed tremendously when he came back from the Signal Corps in World War II, after filming, and most of that color film that we see of World War II, it's his. He shot it. But he was there when they liberated Dachau, the concentration camp. And that changed him completely from what he was doing in Hollywood before the war. And I think, you know, for him to do, you know, Shane and Giant and The Diary of Anne Frank, these were like big humanistic approaches to film, like making a statement. And he saw this. He saw what was going on in West Texas. But at the same time, you know, he had to balance it out too. It had to be a Western, and it had to be liked by the majority of it. It became a hit in 1956. It did. And actually, Juana and some of those things sort of got buried. In the early publicity, you hardly ever see anybody. They wrote about it before it was released, that this was going to be very controversial. And after it showed, everybody just calmed down.
It is. It's fascinating that the film and the novel as well give the character played by Elizabeth Taylor in the film, Leslie, really the outsider's eye that looks at all of this that everyone else has almost taken for granted. She's this lens through which we recognize racism and sexism in the real American West.
Which was Edna Ferber's trademark. I mean, she'd always write strong women, you know, in her writing. And she was one of the most read female writers, you know, at the time. As a matter of fact, she put George Stevens into almost like a bidding war. She made him wait because he wanted the book, but she serialized Giant first in Ladies' Home Journal. But we see that today. As Leslie's role, you know, we say, wow, this was early on that this was going on. She was challenging Bick, you know, calling him a Neanderthal and stuff because of his views. And her whole effort for social change, working with the Mexicans in the Mexican village, you know, when Angel is sick and so forth. All of that is just amazing to me of that time period. And it was probably very new for Westerns.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Do residents of Marfa today, Hector, think the movie had any effect on the culture of the town?
Very much so. I mean, I think that Giant is in their DNA. You know, it's interesting because you have a pre-arrival and a post-arrival. How Marfa was before Giant and how Marfa was after Giant. People, you know, if you go to Marfa, there's plaques and there's like the Paisano was, hotel was the Giant Central for everybody. It was there, you know, and it's still there. And there's an exhibit hall in there of Giant. And everybody's real proud that Giant was filmed there. The segregated school that was there when it was being filmed, it took 10 years for it to shut down after Giant had left. The segregated cemetery that was there when Giant was filmed in 55 is still there with a fence, barbed wire fence separating the Anglo side and the Mexican side. And there's a lot of people, Anglos included, that want that fence torn down because of what it's a symbol. Yeah, what it represents, the separateness, you know. And then, of course, Marfa has become a real thriving little, it's a small town, but it's a thriving arts community worldwide. I mean, you'll see Robert Redford or Beyonce or anybody walking down the street, you know, artists from all over the world come there. It has attracted that. It's known for that. And so yet here you have another whole group of people coming in that don't intermingle really with the traditional Marfa residents. So there's yet another type of separation there.
My guest is documentary director Hector Galán. His film Children of Giant airs on PBS stations, including KERA Channel 13 Television, tomorrow night at 9. We'll resume our conversation with Hector about Giant and about his film Children of Giant in a few minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Back in 2 minutes with Hector Galán.
Thank you. Funding for Think comes from the new SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program for Dallas community leaders and professionals. Now accepting applications for fall. More at smu.edu/DLS.
That, of course, is "The Eyes of Texas Are Upon Us," as heard in the movie Giant. We are speaking this hour with the documentary director Hector Galán, whose new film is called Children of Giant. You can see it on PBS stations around the country, including KERA Channel 13 television tomorrow night at 9. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. On a lighter note, Hector, there's a wonderful story in the film of local kids not only being allowed to act as extras, and there were lots of scenes of sort of people in their homes and hanging around, they were paid, what, like a nickel or a quarter each to round up tumbleweeds.
That's right. It's funny. I mean, at the previous screenings that we've had, when that story is told, because they're out chasing tumbleweeds for the exterior, you know, dusty scenes when both Bick and the newlyweds arrive, basically, mm-hmm. to the Riata Ranch, and they look out the window, and all you see are these tumbleweeds, and the audience just starts laughing, and that scene just gets a big laugh. Well, you know, you're in West Texas. What do you have? Tumbleweeds.
It's true. They're out there, but, you know, if you ever have had one hit you, they're pretty fierce when the wind is blowing. They're very scratchy. Yeah. So what do you think, Hector? I mean, it's so funny because people know the Riata from the film, the ranch, and then many people are also aware that, of course, it was all a facade. And there's sort of a symbolism to that that is hard to ignore.
Well, all that's left is just ruins. I mean, if it were me, I probably would have made it into a tourist stop because so many people want to go over there and see that, you know, but the... You know how ranchers are. You know, they don't like strangers on their property. But now it's just ruins. And that's how we open Children of Giant. And this facade, this amazing house, this like the Victorian house in the middle of nowhere. I mean, this gigantic house. It is. The symbolism is really... J.E. Smythe, the author of Edna Ferber's Hollywood, sort of likens it to the house. You know, the way a plantation house in the South... Mm. She has those connotations to it, but I think that's what made the film unique, and that house is iconic, you know?
What was the critical reception to the film when it first came out?
Well, I think that early on, there was more criticism to the film before it was released, but once it was released, it was a hit. It was a major hit. It got nominated for... 10 Academy Awards, and George Stevens, as you mentioned, won for Best Director. I think in academia and film study, maybe there's probably more criticism than people. I think the people, audiences in general, really, or even reading early critics, I don't see anybody really coming down on George Stevens, on his vision or the film. Some academic writers do. They claim that this is... Bick's role is a great white hope, you know, and some people claim that, Sal Mineo, who played Angel Obregón, the GI that grew up on the Riata, and then he comes back in a coffin. In the book, he comes back as a rebel. That's what they used to call pachucos, which are like zoot suiters. It was a subculture in the Latino community of, you know, these rebel with music and all of that. At that time, you know, in the 50s.
Like proto-cholos, basically, for people who don't.
Like yeah. Cholos, yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were always told growing up, like our parents, you want to grow up and be a pachuco? You know, because they were always looked at as, you know, hey, you don't want to be a pachuco. But Sal Mineo, the fact that he was cast to play that particular role with his doe, innocent eyes, people, you know, have written about that too, you know. Other than that, you know, the movie to this day I think still holds. And the wonderful thing is that when we do have screenings that we've had so far, standing room only screenings, people are very interested. young people say, I want to watch that movie, which is, you know, I say, wow, this is great. You know, people to refamiliarize themselves with a movie. And that way they can understand the newer generations, what the older generations and our parents and grandparents went through, you know, to achieve what they had to overcome and what the human spirit can do, you know, when there's this adversity.
It's quite an achievement, Hector, that in the documentary, I mean, I'm familiar with the film, but I think that people would be engaged with the documentary even if they were not, even if they didn't know Giant before. The story itself is compelling enough. And as you say, you can watch the doc and want to see the film rather than having to sort of study up and see the film first and then watch the doc.
You're right. I mean, you can, I don't know. I've been involved in doing so many documentaries through the years that I love to do. Thank God for PBS, you know, and I'm really proud of Latino Public Broadcasting that's creating this series called Voices, that this is what kicks off that series that's destined to become a signature series with Latino-themed programming. Yes, I think you can walk away with a true understanding of the movie by watching Children of Giant. I was a little bit afraid in approaching. I've you know, been thinking about this in the past, you know, about creating two storylines. That's always very dangerous. I was afraid that the movie Giant was so big that it would overshadow the story that I wanted to tell about Blackwell, you know, the segregated Mexican school and the people. But it balanced so beautifully. It's when I started realizing that George Stevens, my God, was way ahead of his time and bringing out what he did at that time, that it worked beautifully together. You know, what the story with the movie, and then the story that I wanted to tell, intertwined to make these incredible scenes, you know.
At the end of your film, toward the end of your film, we do see this very moving scene where that segregated school that you mentioned, that had this ceremony to bury words in Spanish, people came together there once again. Tell us what happened.
Well, we brought Elsa back because for us, as I mentioned, you know, Elsa was a star and our hero, even though her role was small and there was no fanfare for her when the movie was released, like there was for Elizabeth Taylor and all of that. So we wanted to bring her back, and she hadn't been back in 55 years, you know, and then it's what she represented. And so they brought her to this school that has now become a the Texas historical landmark. They didn't want to tear the segregated school down. They wanted to keep it as a memorial, even though you probably think, why would they want to keep, you know, a segregated school as a memorial? But a lot of people went through that school. That was their school, and they wanted to keep it, so they succeeded. And then as they were forced to bury their Spanish language and heritage in the previous years, they did a symbolic, you know, opening of the school as a museum now, and they dug up the Spanish that they were forced to bury, which is a very powerful scene, and the people gather and give Elsa, you know, like an honor, and I see that, and it just kind of, you know, I say, wow. To me, that's much bigger than even her standing and getting an Academy Award, you know, just the people acknowledging her. And that's what I wanted. And that's why, like I mentioned, Susan King, who writes classic reviews and classic movies, said, my God, I've never seen Giant in this light. And that's what I was hoping. It's all positive. It's all great. I think people are going to enjoy watching the movie. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, another interesting thing is that you played the theme a while ago of Giant, and we wanted to incorporate some of that music, but believe it or not, and maybe I was thinking for the young people, younger audiences, it does date the movie, the music. Hmm. The film doesn't. It is an evergreen. So we did a score to pay tribute to Giant, original score, and we scored it in Sofia, Bulgaria, with their world-class 57-piece orchestra. That's just incredible, and that's what you'll see here when you see it on air. And, you know, and so, you know, it's just a fun movie to watch and to learn from.
Hector Gallant, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you about this project. I really appreciate the time that you've taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Grace.
Hector Galland's new documentary is called Children of Giant. It airs on KERA Channel 13 television tomorrow night at 9. You can also hear Hector Galland once again, a different interview at 10 o'clock on Texas Standard. You'll hear that here on KERA 90.1. We want to thank all of you who have been listening this hour. Thanks.